Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to this conference call of DSM. Throughout today's presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To register for questions, you might dial star one at any time. If any participant has difficulty in hearing the conference, please press 00 on your push-button phone. Now, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Paulussen. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this second conference call for media today. This has a twofold reason. One, to give the U.S. media the opportunity to ask questions, but also because this is not a straightforward deal, and many of you are struggling with the complexity and have follow-up questions. So sitting here with me is Mr. Rolf-Dieter Swaap, CFO and member of the Managing Board, and Mr. Stefan Dubowski, member of the Managing Board and responsible for the pharma cluster, is on the phone from New York. Mr. Swaap will shortly elucidate on this morning's announcement by DSM and JLL, and after that, will answer your questions. As a reminder, today's presentation can contain forward-looking statements. In that regard, I would like to point you to our disclaimer regarding forward-looking statements as published on our website and in our press releases. Rolf-Dieter, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Angelique. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the second conference call on the announcement we did earlier this morning together with JLL Partners about combining DSM Pharmaceutical Products with Patheon. I will keep my opening comments short, and by the way, the same as in the first call, to allow for as much time for questions as possible. This announcement is a key step in the strategic transformation of our pharma activities into partnerships. Nearly 3 years ago, we announced DSM Sinochem Pharmaceuticals, the joint venture for our anti-infectives activities. Together with JLL Partners, we are now announcing that we want to create a new company which will be a leading pharma services company. By combining DSM Pharmaceuticals with Patheon, we are creating a global contract development and manufacturing organization for the pharmaceutical industry with anticipated 2014 sales of around $2 billion and a strong EBITDA and a strong operational cash flow. It will be 51% owned by JLL and for 49% by DSM and operate as an independent standalone company. The name of the company will be announced in the coming months, so for now we provisionally call it NewCo. DSM Pharmaceutical Products and Patheon are two highly complementary companies. The combination offers the best option for substantial value creation for our DPP business. After a successful completion of a transaction to take Patheon private, NewCo will have an unmatched end-to-end offering from drug products to active substances. The company will have a global footprint of 23 locations across North America, Europe, Latin America, and Australia, with about 8,300 employees. Combining DPP and Patheon is fully in line with our strategy for the pharma cluster and is an excellent value creation opportunity. DSM and JLL will work together to maximize the value of NewCo. In the press release and in the presentation to investors, you will find more information about the transaction, which involves the taking private of Patheon by NewCo for an enterprise value of nearly $2 billion. DPP is valued at $670 million. Next to the 49% share in NewCo, DSM will also receive a so-called vendor note of around $200 million that carries a yearly interest of 11%. The transaction is expected to close in the first half of 2014 and will have a positive effect on DSM's earnings per share from 2015 onwards. We will deconsolidate DPP after the closing. As we are also deconsolidating DSP, the joint venture with Sinochem, because of a change in IFRS accounting rules, as from 2014, we will no longer report the pharma cluster separately. And with these remarks, can we open the lines for questions, please?
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will start the question and answer session now. To be registered for questions, you may press star 1 at any time. If you're on speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. The first question is from Mr. Bart Koster, Dow Jones. Go ahead, please, sir.
Yes, good afternoon again. Thanks for the second availability. I have a question about the social consequences for the pharma employees within DSM. Can you elaborate a bit on that, Mr. Schwab?
Mm-hmm. Just a few remarks, and Stefan can add to it. Of course, in such transaction, and that is even by law, not because of our contract, at the moment of the closing, all the people basically transfer into the new company. And that is the first step. Now, what the new company later will in detail do when they develop their strategy and their way forward and look at potential changes to the setup, that of course still needs to be developed. And even for now, only the CEO of the new company is known and named and was mentioned in the press release. The rest of the management team still has to be put together by him looking at the people in both companies currently. So the first step is very clear and simple, and what will happen in detail later, I think we cannot speculate too much today about. Stefan, do you want to add something?
Yeah, what I would add, Rosita, is if you look at the rationale for putting the two companies together, this is something about growth in this industry. There was no real clear leader, and I think we believe by putting those two companies together, you just have a pretty unmatched offering in the market, and we expect a lot of focus on driving growth in this new company. One. Secondly, if you look at the overlap of those companies, it's also, as Rolf-Dieter mentioned, very complementary. From the DPP side, there was a stronger focus on the API side of the business. Patheon has an exclusive presence in the whole finished dosage business, so there is some overlap. But the major element we see really in number one is top-line growth and in operational efficiencies.
Okay, but this means it's too early to say whether there will be job losses due to synergies.
Exactly. Look, I think this is something at that moment in time we really need to leave up to the new management to see how they exactly position the new organization. I think what is important in when we speak about social consequences, what is the key logic of the deal? And this is not now SG&A synergies. The key logic of the deal is really top-line synergies.
Thank you.
But we should not forget that both companies individually already now have a couple of restructuring programs, profit improvement programs running. And, of course, they will continue to do so even before closing. I mean, in our part, we have at the moment a project running in Austria and our operations in Linz, but also Patheon has projects running in locations because every company who is in a very tough and competitive market permanently needs to look at their efficiencies. So these projects which are already running, of course, will not be stopped.
Thank you.
The next question is from Ms. Sarah Webb, Reuters. Go ahead, please, ma'am.
Yes, hello. Could you mention who you consider your competitors in this field to be? And also, could you describe in a bit of detail who are your big name customers in this sort of outsourcing area, please? Perhaps you could give a couple of examples of products that you make for them. Thank you.
Yeah, if I take your first question, whom you consider your competitor, there is nobody in the total industry who has this complete offering as those two companies together. If you just name two, three other big companies who are in the contract development and manufacturing space, you should think of companies like Lonza, for example, or a company like Catalent. Those I would name as examples, but again, none of them with the same breadth of and depth of offering as the new company will have. Customers, the customer ranges of the two companies are quite complementary. We'll be serving all four major segments of the pharmaceutical industry. So this would be large pharma houses. Then you should think of companies such as Merck, Pfizer, GlaxoSmithKline, but also generic pharmaceuticals. Think of companies such as Sandoz, Teva. These would be typically representatives of generic pharmaceutical houses, but also specialty farmers. Think of companies such as Shire, for example, Gilead, Amgen, and then emerging pharma companies. And this, then you should think more of smaller companies who are more, call them venture-backed startup companies. So all four segments the new companies will be serving. I will not mention now individual products. That is something that typically for confidentiality reasons, because these are very often one-on-one relation, we do not disclose.
Okay, perhaps I could just have a follow-up question then and ask, what is the industry trend that is driving you into this sort of combination? What is it that's going on globally that is forcing you into each other's arms?
Yeah, what you see in there are two trends. The one is the pressure on healthcare costs. I think that weighs heavily on pharmaceutical companies. They need to further strengthen the efficiency in their own, let's say, internal system. That drives the trend to outsourcing, because there is inefficiencies within the pharmaceutical sector when it comes to manufacturing and supply chain management. Now, companies then, such as this company, is extremely well suited to do that, because just the pure focus is on manufacturing and supply chain management. So that is one. The second thing is that the whole industry space was enormously fragmented. So where you have very, very, let's say, you know, customers with a, you know, very wide set of needs, yeah, you had a rather fragmented supply space, and there's quite some call from pharma companies for high-quality suppliers who cover the full breadth of technology, but also the depth of the value chain. Those are the two trends that I would stress.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question is from Mr. Bart Meyer, AMP. Go ahead, please, sir.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Thank you for your time. I was wondering if you could tell us some more about the main effects that you expect on your results next year due to this transaction, and the effects you see from 2015 onwards.
Okay. Now, of course, we have to take an assumption. Let's assume, I mean, we say closing will be in half one, so whenever the closing is, then, first of all, the business will be deconsolidated, so it will not show up anymore in sales, in cost, in EBITDA, in EBIT, but it will show up with its net result, and then, of course, 49% of it in our financial income and expense under associates. So it will change completely in the way it will be represented in the profit and loss statement. Now, at the net income level, that does not make a difference. It's only a presentation difference. Now, at net income level, so earnings, we expect it more or less to be neutral next year, maybe very slightly negative, but basically neutral. And that has to do with transaction costs and implementation cost of the whole transaction. In 2015 and also, of course, the following years, we expect that the 49% holding of this new company will contribute to our earnings per share, and in a growing way, because of the expectations that this business will develop nicely and will really contribute also then to the DSM earnings per share compared to today. So that is basically the effects you will see. First, you will see reporting, but by the way, also already in quarter four this year, where it is reported under asset held for sale. Now, it's not a sale, of course, we know that, but that's the technical term of IFRS. Mm-hmm. And that will continue until closing, and then it will be deconsolidated. And the effect then will be for next year roughly neutral and positive as of 2015 with an increasing contribution.
Okay, and the effect on sales next year?
Yeah, that depends. I mean, the sales, as I said, as of closing, the sales will not be reported anymore in sales. Mm-hmm. We will report numbers on sales. We will also discuss the business because it's significant in our quarter results most likely. But the sales number of DSM will not include it anymore. Until closing, so for the first whatever months, until the closing happens in the first half year, the sales will be reported as part of DSM sales.
Because okay, until the closing, yes.
Because it's still 100% off.
Yeah. Okay, but there's no estimate on the effect after the closing on sales.
Yeah, it depends when closing happens.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
The next question is from Mr. Hans de Jong, Financiële Dagblad. Go ahead, please, sir.
Thank you. Of the 2,400 DPP jobs, how many are in R&D and how many of those are in the Netherlands?
Stefan.
Yeah, I do not know now the exact figure of the R&D people in the Netherlands. Now, if you look at the activities in the Netherlands, this is mainly our activities in biologics in Groningen and in Venlo, together maybe around 250 people. Now, the company will still draw also on the R&D resources of DSM. So I cannot give you now at that moment an exact detail of how many R&D people there would be.
Did I understand you correctly that there are only 250 people within DPP working in Holland?
Yeah, exactly. The majority of the DPP people actually is at our big sites in Austria, in Linz, and at our big site in Greenville in the United States. Those are, in terms of people, by far the biggest sites. And then we have the smaller sites in Regensburg and in Germany.
Italy.
But that is about the figure you should think of for Holland.
And of your total R&D spend, how much goes to DPP?
Rolf Dieter, do you know
that? It is published in the annual report. My guess is that this would be around DPP 30 to 40 million, so about 10% of our total R&D. But it's a little bit of a guess now, but it is published in our annual report every year.
Yeah. What exactly do the DPP people do in Venlo and Groningen?
Yeah, in the Venlo facility, they make advanced intermediates and some active substances. And in Groningen, this is the plant that does biopharmaceuticals, so mammalian cell biopharmaceuticals.
Yeah. Which of the two would you qualify as high-tech, both, or is Groningen more high-tech than Venlo?
Yeah, the word to use high-tech is I find it difficult. If you look at what is the more modern technology, then I would say yes, biopharmaceuticals are clearly more modern it's just a younger industry, let me put it that way. I find it difficult to say high-tech, non-high-tech.
What exactly should I understand when we're talking about biopharmaceuticals in the context of Groningen? Could you be more specific?
Yeah, what you should think of, you know, monoclonal antibodies would be a typical class of very large proteins that are made by using a mammalian cell. Now we get very technical. A mammalian cell as a production organism. But we speak about very large molecules, typically in this space, for example, of oncology and so on. So large proteins, that is what we call typically biopharmaceuticals.
Hans, if you've got any further questions, I suggest we arrange a one-to-one interview and that we now go on to the next question. Is that
How will we go about that?
Just give us a call at the media relations line, just straight after the call, and we'll set it up.
Okay, Doug. Thanks.
The next question is from Mr. Edwin van der Schoot. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I had two questions, but my colleague Hans de Jong from the Financieel Dagblad asked very good questions. So now I have one left, which is... Or Mr. Swal, I was wondering if you are seeking to IPO the joint venture. in the end, so that DSM could sell its 49% stake, because in the end, I think DSM would be looking for 100% sale of its pharma assets. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, we for the time being, I think the strategy is very clear. We have announced that 3 years ago. We want to go for a partnership to really improve the business performance. And that is the task for the next years. So I think at the moment, neither have we done any, made any decision or even put a lot of thoughts into it, nor is it wise to do so. Let's first improve the company and the business, and then later we will see if anything, what might change or not change. And of course, in the 49-51, it's also not us just deciding what will happen. But today, this is, I think, not very very meaningful to speculate already what might happen in years from now. The task in the coming period is very clear. In the next couple of months, close the deal, and after that, get the whole new company to work in the way we hope and expect it.
I'm sorry if I missed it, but do you have a location for the headquarters of the new company?
Stefan?
That is something that has not been announced yet. We will do that prior to closing.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, for any additional questions, please press star 1. So for any additional questions, please press star 1. The next question is from Mr. Bart van Kallis, Financieel Dagblad. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I have two questions. One is, could you tell me more about the conditions of the seller note of $200 million? And second question is, the new company pays 64% premium to Patreon's share price from yesterday. Is that a fair price, or is it an extra premium to compensate GLL partners or something?
Stefan, on the last one.
Yes. Look, you know, the 64% of the last share price, if you look at the at Patreon, it was a company which is owned the majority by JLL and a couple of individuals. So the free float and the daily trading volumes are extremely low. So it's not really a good representation of the value of the company. The transaction multiple that you should think of is very much in line with other deals that have been done in the space. So yes, it is a very fair price for the company. Rolf Dieter, you want to take the seller's notes question?
Yeah. And also, by the way, the Canadian process of taking a company private follows certain rules with certain committees involved, and that also plays a role in defining the price, that it is fair, especially if a company like this here has a relatively small free float and low trading volumes, where the share price might be a bit more volatile. On the seller note, yeah, it's $200 million. It receives an interest of 11% per year, but payable only at the end. So whatever the end then exactly looks like, and when that is the case. So in the meantime, every year we will register on our balance sheet a receivable of 11% of the seller note. After a few years, it is also possible that we would sell it off to somebody else. Mm-hmm. But the question there, of course, will be, yeah, you most likely will have to give a kind of a rebate. And then, does it make sense? We need cash as DSM.
Yeah.
It's a theoretical possibility, but it's at the end, it's also not an extremely huge amount.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Mr. Neil Umek, Reuters. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Could you tell me a little bit about the tradable, whether the seller's note is tradable? And could you also tell me a little bit about what the EBITDA, or give some guidance as to what percentage of the EBITDA of the underlying pharma division, DPP, is? And then lastly, you were talking about multiples. can you just talk about how you you know, how the final valuation of 2.6 is, how you see that, how that's fair? Because if I do a sort of 9-10 times EBITDA multiple, it looks like it's quite an aggressive price.
Yeah, the calculation, and we mentioned that also probably in the earlier call, so excuse me.
Sorry.
I don't always exactly remember which call we said it, but it has been mentioned before that the multiple is roughly 10, which is, as Stefan explained on a previous question, basically in line with other transactions in the industry which happened in the last years. So it's not special in any way.
So that's 10 times EBITDA, right? EV EBITDA multiple.
Yeah.
Okay.
Our EBITDA DPP we do not disclose, as you know. So
can you disclose share of sales or I mean any sort of guidance?
Yeah, the sales I think I even mentioned in the press release.
Yeah, they mentioned 540.
No, sorry. It's 542. Okay.
Yeah.
And what is that as a percentage of the overall pharma division sales?
Because the other part of the pharma division is a 50-50 and already only consolidated for half.
Yeah.
This is almost 75%, I would say, today.
Okay. So if I assumed it was as profitable, which is an assumption, obviously, then I would do 75 of...
Yeah, okay.
Of the EBITDA, which is forecast about 65.
Yeah, okay. But that we also said, because we indicated the multiple, and you can safely assume that the multiple valuation for our part of this transaction today is very similar to the multiple used for the Patheon taking private. And then the seller note, yeah, but that's what also was on the previous question, is tradable after a number of years. Not immediately, because in the first period has to be without financial interventions, if I may call it like that. So it would be a kind of stable period. It is tradable, but as I said on the previous question, if we would want to trade it, to sell it to somebody, I guess since we are at least very close and also a shareholder to the company, to give a sizable rebate, and then the question would most likely be, is that really something that should do or not?
Yes. Okay. And sorry, just when you said the multiple is very similar to the multiple on Patheon, sorry, do you mind just walking me through that?
Yeah, we talked about roughly 10 multiple, and our valuation is also disclosed in the press release, $670 million. And that follows, of course, the same.
So the EBITDA is about 67?
US dollars.
US dollars, yeah. Okay,
but to be careful there, these EBITDA, of course, they are always adjusted away from one-time effects and specials or so to make it really comparable. In the
right.
Press release, it says relative to the EBITDA of the of Patheon that it follows basically the definition of the bank loans. But it is a more normalized EBITDA which you use in these cases. So it's not necessarily exactly the number you might see at the end of a year in results.
Right, but it's
but
not
order of magnitude, of course, it's not completely off.
Okay. So if I work the 67 number, I'll be okay. Okay. And sorry, is it fair to describe the main benefit apart from the top line growth that you describe as being an advantage of this deal? Is it fair to describe the main benefit as being the accounting benefit of removing it from your EBIT numbers, sort of enhancing your margin?
No, I would certainly not say that at all. I mean, we have put the partnering strategy for pharma in place because we said we can do a lot of own improvements, restructurings here and there, getting new customers. But already 3 years ago, we had the strong feeling that this will not be sufficient to move you to a profitability level which this business needs.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with economies of scale and other factors. So
yes.
The whole partnership idea is to bring the business to a much more successful platform and higher profitability. This deal is like it is, and we describe it today, not completely easy maybe. The 50-50 joint venture with Sinochem was a completely different structure, that the consequence of both is that they will be deconsolidated. That is just an accounting consequence, but that is not the objective.
Okay, but I'm sorry, you're just talking about, you haven't disclosed the synergies that you expect, but if I heard you properly earlier, perhaps I misheard you. I thought you said the main benefit was revenue synergies rather than cost synergies.
Look, maybe to clarify, The major driver is indeed top line growth. We think this is a rather unique offering. We also see synergies in capex avoidance. We see synergies in some part there will be SG&A saving, purchase savings, and so on. So also, of course, on the cost side. But the major driver is indeed cost synergies. But if you look into the benefit of this is you do in a transaction where DSM doesn't need to put cash in, you create an industry leader. Yeah, and this industry leader now has a very different position in the industry as the individual companies had before. And that was the logic also behind the whole strategy. How do we create scale without now using DSM funds to acquire something and so on? And I think that is something that we have accomplished with this deal.
Okay. Okay. And sorry.
We have to move on.
Sure.
There are no further questions at the moment.
Oh, okay, no further questions. And sorry, just the EBITDA number of 67. That was I didn't ask you properly. That was this year or forecast for 2013 or forecast for 2014?
No, this was the number, but on a pro forma basis, adjusted for one times effects for this year. But don't forget it's US dollars.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, adjusted for this year. Fantastic. Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay.
Operator, no further questions.
No, there are no further questions at the moment.
Then I think this concludes our conference call today. But perhaps Rolf Dieter would like to give a short summary.
Yeah, I think maybe always worth summarizing at the end still what the key highlights are. I think for us it's really a key step in the transformation of our pharma activities into partnerships, which we announced in September 2010. Where we really want to maximize the value for all involved stakeholders, and that, of course, includes the shareholders. And we believe that this combination of our DSM pharmaceutical products business with Patheon has a very strong complementary fit and offers the best option for substantial value creation for DPP. Thank you very much again, and have a good remaining day.
Okay, that was it. Thank you very much for your attention and your questions. If you have any further questions, and it sounds like you have, please contact us. We will be available for the rest of the day. With that, I now hand you back to the operator.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the DSM conference call. Thank you for attending. You may now disconnect your line. Have a nice day.